When I'm talking about fraud, I'm talking about like the group that used to walk around in certain neighborhoods and they would get seniors to sign up for credit cards and then they would use their points and they would sell those points. Like points brokers, huge problem. Don't engage with them. You can earn points on your own. But like those kinds of things where people are like making money selling points. Other things that can be problematic are the manipulation of like upgrade space. That has been a problem, something that's been a problem historically with people like buying. This is was a big problem in Asia. This is reflected when you look at the change fees for award tickets with some of the Asian carriers, that if your boarding pass has been scanned, there's a huge cancellation fee because they had a problem at one point in time with people like booking the whole cabin using points. And then they would cancel just before departure so that then their upgrade would clear. That's fraud. Don't do that.
Hey there, points people. You just heard a clip from Tiffany Funk from PointMe. Tiffany is the co-founder and president at PointMe, and she's been working in the world of points and miles for more than a dozen years. She's also been a key contributor to the points blog, One Mile at a Time. In this episode, expect to hear about the best airlines for finding award space deals, crazy stories about the kinds of fraud that people have tried to commit when it comes to airline tickets, why having status might open up more award space for you in the future, and so much more. And if you're looking for an easy way to earn more points, consider the Capital One Venture Card. The points earned with this card can be transferred to tons of different airlines, such as Air Canada, British Airways, and Turkish Airlines. And it's a great default card to use because you'll always earn at least 2 points per dollar everywhere. Remember, if you decide to apply for the Capital One Venture Card or any other card, never apply directly through Google. Always use a friend or creator's referral link. And if you're interested in supporting this show when you apply for your next card, check out geobreezetravel.com/cards. And if you're not sure what card is right for you, I offer free credit card consultations at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. And we have links to the Capital One Venture Card and the free consultation form for you in the show notes as well. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipino-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking. Hey, Tiffany, welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Hi, thank you.
You are one of the foremost experts in the world of points and miles, and PointMe is probably one of the most innovative inventions to come around with award searching in the last few years. So really excited to dive into what you guys have built and what you guys are building in the future. But before we jump into all of that, tell us a little bit about you and your background and how did you get into the world of points and miles?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I have been involved in points. I come to points from a love of aviation, which used to be very common, but I think that's less common in the current landscape of people who are in the like miles and points space. So for me, my dad and my uncles were pilots, private pilots, not commercial pilots. My grandfather was in the Air Force. So I grew up in planes and loving planes and just that view from 30,000 feet. And when I got older, I was doing a lot of work in a more like sales type role where, you know, you're back and forth, you're staying in like mediocre hotels, you're putting the phone book under the alarm clock so when you roll over in the middle of the night, you know what city you're in because of the name on the spine. Gen Z doesn't know what I'm talking about, but that's okay. So I got into points from hotel points, from doing like that kind of slog. Because when you have a job like that, you start valuing status really quickly because that's the not having to wait in line to check in when you get to the hotel at a stupid time. That's the being able to justify room service and still be within your expense allowance and then actually get some benefit at the end of the year from all of the like gross travel that you've been doing. So it really started with that. And then moving into airline points when we moved across the country from my husband's family. And so then your motivation becomes like, okay, we're in our 20s. We have negative money. Because that's how it works for the most part, right? When you're in your mid-20s. And how do we set this up so that we can get home more than once a year? because if we're just like budgeting out our finances as 20-year-olds living, we were in DC and like the most expensive zip code in the country, it was not going to happen. So really got into the airline points that way. And I think that's the more honest answer than being able to be like, I was a top tier United elite when I was 7, which is also true, but you don't really have a lot to do with that when you're a 7-year-old.
So how did you then move on to building Point Me based off of your love of aviation? Did you just wake up one day and be like, I think I'll build Point Me today? Or what was the story behind that?
Gosh, no, but that would be a great story if true. I wish that I could have just like conceive of great ideas like that. So prior to what I'm doing with Point Me, I have been working with Ben at One Mile at a Time since 2011, 2012. It's been like many minutes. And so as part of doing that, you know, of course, we have the blog and all the business operations that go along with that and the front row seat to what's really going down in the miles and points space, right? You have banks who are saying, hey, do this thing, and airlines who are saying, get this thing, and poor consumers who are in the middle and they're like, okay, but how? And when you are running a blog, you have a lot of opportunities to take one topic and really go deep and explain it. And Ben is so phenomenal at that. He's a great content creator. And you take that and you multiply it by decades of work and blog posts. And there's just so much content. In addition to the blog, we also had Points Pros, which was our award booking service back before that was like a really prominent thing. We didn't really ever talk about it on the blog because, as I'm sure you've noticed, when you talk about things publicly, there can be a deluge. So that business was pretty word of mouth. And what was great about that is it gave us insights from a different consumer base than would read the blog or be on Flyer Talk. And so it's, hey, here's this different customer persona who is also having these same problems with what they think that they're getting from their bank versus what they want to get from airlines and can't connect the dots. So that is where Point Me comes from, is partnering with Adam, who had Juicy Miles, and he had the idea of search is a little bit of a problem. If he had a much bigger award booking service and 10 dozen people sometimes working during certain seasons, booking mileage runs and things like that, where like you just needed a lot of people and a lot of help, and was like, there's got to be a better way to search rather than opening 30 browser tabs. That's no way to live. And as he got into it more and he'd put up an early version of it and we spent more time talking, and he's so brilliant in so many ways. He's like, look, I think this has legs as a consumer product. I think if we take what's in our brains and we start from scratch and we really rebuild this and think about what is the normal person, not the miles and points geek necessarily, but our parents, our dentists, our neighbors, you know, what do they need that would help them actually get not just max value from their points, but frankly, any value from their points, because there's so many people who just leave their points on the table. They don't know what to do. And so it was that, like, what if we take everything that's in the brains of these super smart people who have been in this industry forever and productize it and make it something that's super accessible, super approachable that the everyday person can use.
Okay. So you and Adam came together and you were like, let's build a website. Let's build an app. How did you guys come together and build Point Me? Were you guys coding this yourself in the beginning? Did you already have a development team to build this out? What was the kind of the story of putting this product idea that you had into actual coding phase and development phase so that it could be in the hands of all of your users?
Yeah, it's both. We are decently technical and I have become way more technical in the past couple of years. Adam's background is in finance and IT, which you wouldn't think go together, but really do for a lot of reasons. And so when you're taking a product, the first step of that is having an understanding of data science and also data structures. And going through and saying, look, like these are the relationships between airlines and between loyalty programs and between credit cards. And here's the connective fiber. Here's how you build out an ontology around that. And this is why this all matters. And then, yeah, you have to translate that into databases and into computer coding and into what we call our rules engine, which is really the magic of Point Me. Like anybody could go and scrape a website and put up results and whatever, like it's not hard. What's difficult and what you see getting a little bit messy in the space currently is validating the accuracy of those results and making sure that it's something where you can then like partner with a bank and an airline, because your results, you have SLAs with the bank and it has to be like 99.9% accurate. So you have to really know, it's not just about what's on the airline's website, because that's not always correct. Right. And a lot of your audience probably knows there's what the website says and then there's real life and they don't always match. So having all of that and that rules engine for PointMe was the biggest thing. We started in the summer of 2019. So it took us a year and a half to really refine that rules engine. And we spend so much time in it every day of like, this has changed. This is what's going on. Here's this new contract between these two carriers that's informing who has access to what space. Here's what the married segment availability looks like. Airline revenue management in general is so complex that a lot of the points parts of it are bolt-ons for the airlines. So you take something that's super complex and then it's like, oh, and side note, we also have to do something with the points here. So it's super fun. It's really complicated, but you can see that I'm smiling. I know that people aren't going to be able to see me when we talk on the podcast, but I love it because I love solving hard problems. And this is like the toughest nut to crack when you have this issue that no one had been able to solve. Like the airlines couldn't solve it for themselves, really.
Yeah. Translating contracts into code is always an interesting problem in any industry, especially this one, because as lawyers set up contracts, they're not really setting them up with having it being automated and having it being coded in mind later on down the road. So what are some examples of different edge cases that people might not think of where you're like, oh, and then we had to build out this rule because Cathay does this in their contract or JAL does this in their contract. What's an example where it was a weird edge case that you guys had to code in because of some strange contract rule?
Yeah. So one of the ones that I love talking about, this has changed, but I love talking about it, but also because it gets complicated. So let's have a little controversy on the podcast here. Four reasons, and I don't know what those reasons are. Even though Delta showed China Airlines on their website, they would not show connections in Taipei. So a great routing option if you were in like LA or San Francisco or Vancouver would have been VR to Taipei and then down to Sydney. And Delta could build that as an award, but they would not show it on Delta.com. I don't know why. I imagine that it wasn't just a technical limitation, right? There are reasons, but it was possible to go over the phone. So there's something like that where like we had to have that and this is no longer possible. So nobody do this. Please don't terrorize the Delta phone agents. But we had at the time built it into the engine of here's what you do. Here's how it prices. Here's how you check the different segments. Here's how it compiles. Here's what the price should be. And then validating, yes, this is what it is. Yes, it tickets. Yes, all of that. So I think that's a good example of something where the airline website, not super accurate. The inventory is there. It is bookable. You can have confidence in booking it. How do we establish that confidence? What are our steps and our process for having that consistency in what we're telling people is there and being really cyclical about it, making sure that we're keeping it updated, keeping it accurate.
Speaking of cyclical, a lot of airlines will change up all of the rules and partnerships and charts and pricing every year. What are some examples of different price changes that you saw in 2024 where you were like, didn't see that coming. All right, gotta recode a whole bunch of stuff there.
So far, nothing that we haven't seen coming. Anyone who like has heard me speak as far back as like 2014, it's been like eyes on Alaska. Like that program is due for an update. So the fact that they have, not really a surprise, not really a challenge there. I think one of the things that is causing a lot of frustration, and I haven't really seen like the community catch up to this, is just the reality of operations 4 years into a pandemic. And I think it's because it's really emotional to talk about it, right? Like none of us want to talk about it anymore. We're all over it. But it's something that just still impacts flights and operations. And if you are doing revenue management for an airline, one, you're super smart and you have a PhD in some kind of like data science. And what is your level of confidence that like the FAA is going to be able to fully staff the tower at Newark during summer? It's not what it used to be. You don't have the same level of confidence that you're going to have pilots or that you're going to have maintenance turnaround. You have to assume that there's going to be a staffing opportunity somewhere along the journey of a given aircraft. And as a result of that, we don't see the like gluts of award space getting released at the same cadences that we used to. So there's that like lack of predictability. You can't just say, hey, laser eyes 2 weeks before departure and you're going to start seeing things open up. It's not really how it works anymore. The math has become much more involved. That's probably the hardest thing is getting people accustomed to these prices aren't personal. Like it's nothing rude. You're not missing anything. This is actually just the number of points that are now required to go to South America. And you might find the edge cases where you get a deal or a bargain, but it's a very different landscape now and necessitates more of a focus on the earning side and the different things like that you walk people through with, like, how do you earn points and how do you maximize your spend and how do you make sure you're using the credit cards that make sense for you? That is all so much more important than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah. A lot of people, whenever you ask them, when was the golden age to get into points? Everybody's like, oh, right before I got into it, because everybody thinks that the best ways to earn points and redeem points and all of these kind of golden era awards-based things happened 5 or 7 years ago or right before they got into the game. What would you say to those people?
But that's always the thing, always the like, oh, right before I got into it. And I'm not old, but I'm old for the internet and old for this space. And I think about once upon a time when we would be booking awards at Points Pros and we'd have somebody, and I say they were in Florida because we had so much word of mouth business from like these retirement communities in Florida, and they would email or call, but it was like really trying to encourage them to email, which was complicated to do at this point in time. They'd be like, hey, so I talked to Amex and they said it was going to be like 1.5 million points for me to take this trip. We're going on a cruise from Rome to Barcelona, because for whatever reason, that's what it always was. And it's our anniversary and it's really important, but they said it was going to be 1.5 million points a piece. And we have 1.5 million Amex points because we've been using our platinum card for $1 since 1984, but we don't have 3 million points, but my neighbor said that you could do something for us. And at the time, you could transfer American Express points to Continental to redeem on Lufthansa First Class with no fuel surcharges. And people now hear that and like, what? That sounds amazing. But keep in mind, this was the 16-seat cabin for Lufthansa. So it wasn't even lie flat. And now, like, Lufthansa Business Class now is better than Lufthansa First Class was then, other than the champagne. And so I think that's just always a perspective to keep in mind. Oh, it was like this just before I got into this space. But right now, you have all of these other opportunities. You have beautiful cabins. You have like lounges that are actually nice, which did not used to be a thing. So there's always something. There's something to be said for enjoying the present.
There's always something. And so there are also those people who were like, well, the reason that there are no more award seats is because now so many more people know about the game. So what do you say to people who are like, well, the reason it's so much harder to find any award seats and the reason they're all sold out is because of points bloggers or because of services like PointMe, where they just make it so much easier to find all of the award seats for everybody. And that's why I cannot find any more award seats. What do you say to people like that, where they're like, PointMe, you have made it harder for people who are like the true pioneers of this, who are like heart and soul into the hobby, and you've given away the award space to a whole bunch of new people? What do you say to them?
It's interesting, right? Most of the people who would be saying that, they didn't get here before Gary and before Ben. And so like, you benefited from the people who came before you. We all do, in everything in life, right? It's cumulative. That's one of the amazing things about humanity and society, is it's additive, and our knowledge and our experiences compile. So yeah, I don't know. I would say that maybe that person needs to go outside. Is maybe like, oh, how are you gonna do this? Because the reality is, there's a space where everybody wins. And yes, things are different, but things are always going to be different. Yes, there used to be more transatlantic award space if you go back to 2014, but it was so much harder to earn the points. Who cared? So now it's much easier to earn the points. The products are nicer. And it's not that like everyone knows about miles and points. 72 million US households use a points earning credit card. Like, people, everyone has known about points for a minute. It's not that. There are billions of dollars of points that go unredeemed every year. If you look at the number of unredeemed points in circulation, it would be the second largest currency in the world. It's this massive economy, and people redeem their points in all different ways. Right. PointMe isn't subtractive. I think one of the things that really benefits people, even like in this community, is we're able to show you the price. You can feel however you want about it, but this is the price. And there are people in this space who would never, ever in a million years spend 400,000 ultimate rewards points per person for a round trip, California to Australia, and work in an excursionist perk on some Virgin Australia flights domestic. But from a lot of people, that's a fantastic deal. They're like, what? I can take like these United miles that I have and these other points, and I can go exactly the flight I want to go on, exactly the time I want to go. It can be lie flat, business class seat, nonstop. And I'm basically getting these bonus flights domestically for free. That is a bargain. And they are so happy with how they've just redeemed their points. And they didn't take anything away from you, because you weren't going to redeem for LA Sydney at 200,000 points a person anyway.
This very difficult dichotomy for people who are trying to get into points, because on one hand, if you're like, oh, I got some really good award space, there are people who come at you being like, oh, I feel like you took something from me because I was going to get that award space and there's a limited number of seats on the plane and you grabbed that, so less for me. So that's the one hand. On the other hand, if you make some kind of subpar redemption in the eyes of the chosen or whatever, then they're just like, oh, you went to Australia, but you had to spend 500,000 points to get there. You suck. What a loser ball. And for the people who are especially just trying to get into this game, it feels like there's this just very difficult to get into NIMBY points club of people where you're never good enough, where it always just seems like either your redemption was too good and so they're upset with you, or your redemption wasn't good enough and so they're laughing at you, and people are just like, how, what do I do to get accepted into this community?
I really just want my family of four to be able to go and visit our auntie who lives in the Virgin Islands over their school break. That's actually all that one of my good friends wants out of her points. She's like, that's all I want. I want to do that without paying $1,800 per person for my 8-year-olds. There's so many ways that points can benefit so many people. And it's interesting. I'm very zen about a lot of things in this space because I feel like I've seen all the drama. Not like all the drama, but again, the thing about having a front row seat is it's not always just the front row seat. So the lovely parts of miles and points. And so there's been a lot over the years. And I think as a person, I've grown to a place where I just come to the world with a mindset of abundance. And there's just so much. And especially as Americans, like we have too much stuff, right? There's just so much, and there's so much that we can share, and there's space for people to learn. And we can all scoot over a little bit on our platforms and make space for somebody who's coming in with a new perspective or a new way of looking at the world. And that's going to be really interesting. Right? There's somebody whose life is very different than mine. And so they look at points and miles and travel in a really different way. And we can all learn and we can all enjoy it together. And we don't need to segment and block things off.
So PointMe is in a really interesting spot where in the world of points and miles, you have consumers and you have credit cards and you have airlines. And I think a lot of people feel like whenever they get a really good flight deal, oh, I'm flying business class over to Europe, it only costs 50,000 points per person each way, they're like, ha, I didn't have to pay that 1 million points to the airline or something like that. So screw you, airlines. How do airlines and credit card companies actually feel about it when we get these great deals? Are they also happy for us because we are hyping up their program? Or are they like, lost money, I wish she was just slightly less efficient with spending her points and miles? How do they feel about that?
There's a spectrum for that. I think where things become problematic is when you have people who are exploiting systems in like fraudulent ways. And that's different. But when you're talking about, like, here's a sweet spot award, for the most part, and let's use the example of programs with award charts. Hey, like, how is it only this many points to go from like random place to other random place? The reason is math and economics. Right. And the ultimate goal of an airline is to sell every single seat on that plane for the maximum amount that a person will be willing to pay. And if the maximum amount that a person would be willing to pay is 30,000 advantage miles, and it means that seat goes out full that otherwise was going to go out empty, and it allows the airline to operate that route maybe more profitably, that's great. Right. Like, they're getting paid from their partners, they're removing liabilities from their books. So the redeeming of points isn't a problem. The extracting maximum value out of a program fraud, and I know that like what some people feel like, but my behavior could never be fraud, but still, like, those kinds of antics, those are the things where programs have factored in some amount of that, right? It's breakage or shrinkage for people who have worked in retail. Like, you expect that a certain amount of things are going to get walked off with every year. So when it gets, though, to a threshold that becomes incompatible with operating a business is when airlines get frustrated. That's when you see things like program A having to block redemptions on program B or on carrier C, because there has become friction or concern around how those redemptions are happening, the consequences to the airline. Maybe they're getting credit card chargebacks because of fraudulent things, or people, there was a thing, I think it was like 2016, where there was a gang of miscreants who were redeeming, they were accessing people's like IHG accounts and engaging in shenanigans from there. And it ended up becoming a huge problem because then the actual people who owned the accounts were like, wait a second, where'd my points go? What's going on? And just like the unwinding of that was a nightmare. And I think those are the kinds of things where programs are like, this is not how we redeem points. This is not the point of our program. You know, the point of a loyalty program is to drive business affinity and ultimately revenue to the host company. So as long as the behaviors and the actions of people are contributing towards affinity revenue, then the loyalty program is doing its job.
So a lot of people listening to this are probably like, well, I'm trying to maximize value. Are the airlines getting mad at me? How do you craft your message towards those people to say, oh, there is a huge, huge gap between just maximizing your program within the limits versus actual fraud? How do you explain that to people who are probably thinking right now, oh, is what I'm doing too good to be true? And am I going to get flagged by the airlines?
When I'm talking about fraud, I'm talking about like the group that used to walk around in certain neighborhoods and they would get seniors to sign up for credit cards. And then they would use their points and they would sell those points. Like points brokers, huge problem. Don't engage with them. You can earn points on your own. But like those kinds of things where people are like making money, selling points. Other things that can be problematic are the manipulation of like upgrade space. That has been a problem, something that's been a problem historically with people like buying. This is was a big problem in Asia. This is reflected when you look at the change fees for award tickets with some of the Asian carriers, that if your boarding pass has been scanned, there's a huge cancellation fee because they had a problem at one point in time with people like booking the whole cabin using points. And then they would cancel just before departure so that then their upgrade would clear. That's fraud. Don't do that. That's being a bad actor. It's things like that, which are, you know, nonsense. Don't be that guy. You'll get caught and you'll be sad and you'll complain then to Julia and she'll be like, well, don't be like that.
So I know at this point, there are people who are listening to this episode who are like, oh my God, this sounds brilliant. Let's commit low-key financial crimes and fraud. And I am once again here asking you, like we have mentioned on so many podcast episodes, please do not commit fraud. Don't commit low-key financial crimes. Don't, Tiffany, there's something about me where people think that I'm connected to this underworld of points and miles, and I'm not. I know very few people who actually commit financial crimes and points and miles fraud yet. Just reminding people once again, please don't commit fraud.
Just because you feel like you should be able to get that ANA booking, like it's nothing personal that you can't. Like they'd rather sell the ticket. If they feel like they can't sell the ticket or they want to make a certain number available either for their own program or for partners and they offer it to you and you get that great deal and it works with your schedule, like that's great. That's not fraud. That's taking advantage of this system and that problem space where everybody can benefit. That's totally fine.
So a few weeks ago, there was that Air France glitch or something where people were getting business class flights over at Greece or Croatia for 37,000 points. And then a couple days later, Air France rescinded them and people on the internet were like raging and they were like, oh, we should make class action lawsuits. Like people suddenly got internet law degrees or something. What do you say to people like that? Is there a way to reconcile the clear frustration, possibly like well-placed frustration with Air France, where they're like, how come some of your flights are 1 million points, but you're not letting us have this one that's 37,000 points? And then you didn't let us know until a few days later, but you're letting people with status with Air France keep this. Like, how do you try to keep the peace and reconcile that with people? Do you just say, don't attribute to malice what is probably just technical incompetence, or what would you say to that?
I think it's that, and it's a combination of, again, I have a little bit of a mindset of this, and I was not naturally this way as a human, so this is definitely something where Ben has rubbed off on me with the like easy come, easy go. When we did the Beijing runs, like if people are going to Beijing in business class for $400, I want to be one of those people. So I get it. Totally get it. And like, you just have to be realistic. Everybody's just doing the best they can. People are tired. Right? There's technical issues and things like that. And I actually thought the way that Flying Blue handled that was, like, I would give them a B. It could have been faster, and because that stresses people out, because once upon a time, responses to this were very quick or it was different, but I have a little bit more of that viewpoint where I can say, okay, I know that it took you a minute to respond because this was a well-considered decision. And you were trying to think through these edge cases and you were thinking about how the market would respond and how the internet would respond, because that's a thing that you have to worry about now as a business is, are there going to be pitchforks on Twitter? So I felt like they handled it pretty well. I think that the acknowledgement that your loyal flyers are more committed and should be treated with more grace was appropriate. Like, I don't think that's necessarily, like, I wouldn't consider that marketing. I would say that's loyalty is a two-way street. That seems fair. And that seemed like a good way to spice it. It's tricky though with dynamic pricing, because if a million points can be a price, why can 17,000 points not be a price? And then at the same time, I saw that week when that was happening, and you're not going to hear me say anything about it because this is very obviously not intentional. There's such a difference between people who are like, hey, this is interesting, I'm going to go ahead and book it, this seems like a great opportunity to book a trip, and then people who were saying, like, wow, like, my entire inbox is full of e-ticket receipts from airport codes that I didn't know about this morning. Again, there's a spectrum.
Yeah. Speaking of pitchforks on Twitter, it seems like anytime anyone builds anything, there are always people who just rise up angry about something, especially from a technology perspective. With PointMe, has there been anything where you guys are like, oh, yep, that was valid criticism, good product feedback, that's something we can incorporate into the product going forward? Or has most of the feedback just been kind of like, oh, these people are angry and crazy? What's kind of the temperature been there?
Okay, so this is one of the things that is super frustrating for Advent, not the feedback. Actually, like, anytime we get product feedback, whether it's like more direct feedback from bloggers, people who are really into the space, and like, here's my list of the things you need to change, it's like, oh, holy cow, I know. Let me, if I could tell you what's involved in, like, why we haven't done that, like, we're going to need a bottle of something, because it drives me crazy too. So I think there's the majority of things that we hear from customers or from bloggers, people in the space, and, you know, so it's my friends, they're like, you really need to fix this. I'm like, we are working on it. I assure you, if it were as easy as, like, coming up with the task list, we would have done this already. And this is no one's problem, because they're exactly right. Like, it does need to be fixed. And then it starts feeling very personal, because, like, well, don't they know how hard I'm trying to fix it? Of course they don't. It's not their job to know how hard I'm trying to fix it. This is a me problem and a my team problem. So there's that category of stuff. There's other things where I know why you want this. I get why you want this. It's not economically viable for me to provide this right now. It is what it is. And maybe we'll get to a point where we can, partly because we are not willing to do the exploitative things that would be required to enable it. So people are like, I want to see in one click, like, a full calendar of every single award seat on every flight. I'm like, I'm not doing that. We might do it with cache data eventually, but you still have to acquire that data, which means either you are pounding an airline's website, which that doesn't work for us right now, but I understand why you want it. It's also not how most people travel. Most people are like, this is when the kids are out of school. This is when I can get time off from my job. Yeah, that's one of those where it's a trade-off. It's like, again, as a customer or as a person who's a potential customer and you're talking about this thing, like, you're not wrong. I totally understand why you want it. It just doesn't make sense for us right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't necessarily want the full calendar for, like, bad or malicious reasons or anything. It's just, you guys are getting the same emails that I'm getting where people will write in and be like, hey, I'm trying to get from airport A to airport B. I have 20,000 Delta points. Can I fly Q Suites? And we're like, no, that's not really how that works. And we just want to find you, like, the best flight possibility on the calendar given what points you have. But it doesn't always work like that, unfortunately.
I will have to say, because we integrate with Bilt, a solid chunk, and sometimes like 50% of the emails that we get are people who are cranky because they don't have Advantage miles. They've got tons of Ultimate Rewards points because, like, somebody said that they should get an Ultimate Rewards card, or they've got American Express points and they're like, but this flight that you're showing is only available using AA miles. And it's like, yeah, because there's a lot more of that nowadays where programs are preserving inventory for their own members. So you have to think about how you're diversifying your points a bit differently. But what you were saying about, I don't know anything, please help me, is exactly why I love a feature that we just rolled out. It was much harder than we thought it was going to be, but I love it. It's called Explore. And it's something that you can see when you go into Point Me, where we have things set up. So if you know nothing, which is most of us really, ultimately at the end of the day, you can be like, look, I am in Chicago and I love hiking. What are my options? And I love hiking in August, and we'll show you trips and ideas and flights that you can take based off of what other people on Point Me are finding. And so we've gone through and categorized here are great destinations for hiking or for food and wine or for beach and like different things that people might be interested in, so that if people can see what's out there, here's what you can do. Here's the number of points that it should be ballpark. That doesn't mean you might not get a better deal. It doesn't mean that your date might not be pricier or less expensive, but just you can get a sense of it. And I think that's something that's going to be so helpful as an onboarding point for those more novice people, or the people who are like, wait a second, people are talking about like this Capital One card and they're talking about the Citi card and they're talking about this, like, I don't know what I should get. And so having that pathway, what do you want to do with your points? Because if it's that you want to fly Q Suites, you don't need whatever these 10,000 Delta points, right? You need something different. So I'm really hopeful that that will really enable people to get the kind of travel experiences that they want, to feel less overwhelmed by miles and points. Probably as most people listening to this know, that first redemption is what's so tricky, and pulling the Band-Aid off to transfer points for the first time if you've never done that. And I think that's the gap that we're trying to bridge. You can do this. It doesn't have to be like the ultimate sweet spot deal redemption. You can just take the trip that you want to take and you don't have to pay cash for it. You can use these points that you've been accumulating and didn't know how to use.
For sure. What do you think is the future of award space going to look like? Because I think you guys are probably best positioned more than anybody else in the industry to kind of predict types of future trends, at least a lot better than me, because I don't have big data of what kind of award seats all these different airlines are making available and how partner contracts are interacting with each other. What are some of your predictions for future trends in award space?
That's such a good question, Julia. So award space trends, I think in the future. So I think in the near future, we're going to, like the rest of this year especially, continue to see a lot of emphasis on that last seat inventory. And we're going to see some interesting things with that. I would not be surprised if we start seeing last minute discounts, which doesn't mean you should wait to book last minute if you're listening to this, because it's not a guarantee, but a lot more of that understanding of inventory is perishable. Let's make the most of it. And as these revenue management teams get more confident with their predictions of how they can predict like passenger loads and operational things, I think we'll start seeing more of that, because they're not as full as they were last year, but they're all still way more full than 2019. So I think we'll start seeing a lot of that. I think we will also start to see more elasticity between partners and alliances. At one point in time, it was like One World gets this. Everyone in One World gets the same thing. It is part of being One World. Same thing with Star Alliance. And as airlines technology usage has adapted, they have more levers they can pull. And they want to do that, right? Because the point of all of these programs is to have airplanes go out full and redeem points in a way that engages consumers. So I think we'll start seeing more of that, where different partners have different inventory. You can't just assume, oh, there's iSpace and everyone gets it. And then I think the overall trend that we're going to see in loyalty is who you are is what you get. And that's something Aeroplan does pretty well. I think they've pushed to do a lot more of that. And I think we will see more of that. I think if you ask me, what do I think about 10 years for loyalty? It is going to be a lot more of that. What does loyalty mean to a program? And more in that direction. And then more competition for those seats that are otherwise going to go to waste. And more competition from the airline side. And this is something that different programs are taking advantage of, saying, look, like this plane is going New York to London. It's going with 50 passengers or it's going with 200 passengers. And we want our plane to be the one that goes out with 200 passengers. So why not offer the economy seat for 7,500 points? Why not? That's still revenue. It still contributes to paying the flight attendants and paying for the fuel. And then maybe people will like our flight. They'll spend money with duty-free or their onboard purchases or for their luggage. And now they've experienced our airline. That gets them to sign up in our loyalty program. It lets us market to them. Everybody wins.
What do you mean by who you are is what you get with an airline?
Who you are is what you get. So as we start seeing some of these programs shift to a more dynamic posturing with their pricing, it's not like once upon a time where everybody had an award chart. You could look at the X-axis and the Y-axis and be like, this is what I'm going to pay. We are seeing programs that will say, well, if you have status with us, maybe we're willing to discount the price of this connecting segment for you. Sure, it's a partner award. And this is what Aeroplan does, where sure, it's a partner award, but that partner award helps you not at all if you are a tremendous number of customers in Alberta. You've got an entire province where it's not really served by a partner. So getting that connecting flight from Calgary to Toronto or to Vancouver or to Ottawa or to Chicago that we can put on Air Canada Metal, we can give last seat availability to you. And it's going to be this many Aeroplan points. But what is this many is going to depend on, are you a regular Aeroplan flyer? Do you have our credit card? Do you have status? What are you doing? And that's going to inform what we offer that last seat inventory to you for. It's not going to be a static price.
Yeah, that'd be a really interesting future because Bilt is already doing something similar to that where your transfer bonuses for Virgin Atlantic, Aeroplan, Air France, things like that often will depend on your status with Bilt. And so your transfer bonus can range from 75% for Blue status up to 150% for Bilt Platinum status. That would be a very interesting future if Air France was toggling the price that you're paying for an award seat based off of if you have status or not with Air France, or if Air Canada was doing something similar like that, or if American Airlines gave a points discount or an award booking discount to people who had executive platinum status, that would make the points math a lot more interesting indeed.
Again, I don't know that this is something that's going to impact most consumers. I think the way that programs think of it is more of, this is a perk that we can offer our most loyal members, which is that extra availability. And the concept of it isn't new. United has offered discounted economy inventory or additional inventory for people who have the Mileage Plus credit card. They've done that for a decade. So it's more just the evolution of that. And I think you'll still see opportunities because the programs want to acquire new customers. So you'll still see opportunities where like anybody can create an account, transfer points, and get X. It's more if you are loyal to the airline, you might also be able to get Y. That seems sensible to me, like that seems sustainable.
So with everything that you've learned in the decade plus that you've been in the game, because you are one of the foremost experts in the industry of points and miles, what would you say is your number one tip for listeners today on how to level up your points game?
That's interesting. So what is your number one tip for people who want to level up? So I think that partly depends at what level you're at. If it's somebody who is newer, I'd be like, just take it easy. Right? If you're eating an elephant, it's got to be one bite at a time. And again, like this is Ben's influence on me with literally 1 mile at a time. Like it's not necessarily about doing this big e-ticket thing immediately. It's what are the behaviors day to day and the small lifestyle adjustments that you can do on an ongoing basis that unlock a whole bunch. And so that'd be my advice for people who are being like, don't get overwhelmed. You don't need to get 25 credit cards this year. You can make 2 changes to your spending patterns and shift from getting no points for anything to more than 1 point per dollar. And you're going to be ahead of 99.9% of the consumer economy. So I think there's that. And then I think for beyond that, most people are very bad at redeeming miles, ultimately. And until you are at least okay at redeeming miles, you are not earning efficiently. So I think a lot of people spend a lot of time, and it makes sense because this is the easy entry point, and it's what I myself just said, on maximizing their earn, maximizing their spending, really trying to stack up points, and they get their tendency to go overboard, right? People are spending their whole lives like in front of the money order machine, and that's just no way to live. But to learn about redemptions, and that can be something as simple as look and see what's out there. Don't necessarily get stuck on here's the sweet spots, because again, like that can get overwhelming. But just like in general, if I want to do X, what am I going to need? What points do I need? Okay, how does that inform my other choices? And just starting to put that together. And that's honestly, that is, I think, the difference between the people who are extreme experts in miles and points and the people who are extreme experts on the credit card side. Is being able to connect all of that to the earning, to the spending in a reasonable way. Because again, most people are not going to just fly to Senegal because it's cheap.
Yeah, I love that. A lot of people who are listening are like, well, if you're an expert in credit cards, doesn't that mean you're an expert in points and miles? No, nope. Two different things. And the synergy definitely comes when you are able to connect them.
Even before PointMe, we have helped people redeem straight up billions of points, like actually billions of points at saver level and like good rates and just tremendous numbers of points. And so it is with that authority that I say, like, you have to understand how to redeem and how to redeem in practice, not just in theory, because I, more often than not, and it still happens, which is wild to me because I feel like I've been talking about how to not do this for like 8 years, where people will come to me and they'll be like, okay, so I have 1,000,000 points because I got this credit card and then like my wife saw this and like between us, we got all of this and like I got my mother-in-law to do it. So we have 1,000,000 points. I'm like, you have nothing that can be used to redeem for the kind of trip that you want to take. It's like you have 1,000,000 points, but actually you have 150,000 points. So you don't have enough for even one business class ticket, given your other stated goals.
Yeah, for sure. That is great advice. And speaking of great advice, can you give a shout out to somebody else on the internet who you would recommend listeners follow for even more points and miles tips?
Yes. So one of the accounts that I love following on Instagram is of Onika the Traveler. So Onika Raymond, fantastic travel inspiration and good, like practical recommendations at the destination. And I think that's something that is a little bit sometimes lost with the miles and points crowd. So Onika uses points for her travel, but she also like spends time in the destination. So I really love her account for where could I go? What would I do while I'm there? And it's reframing a bit of the conversation because I like to be opportunistic when I travel as well. But maybe there's a place you haven't thought of going and maybe there's a fantastic points deal there.
Perfect. And where can we find you on the internet?
Me personally, I am TEB Funk on everything, but PointMe, it's point.me, it's in the name, it's very easy. And that's all of our handles as well.
Perfect. Well, thank you again so much, Tiffany, for coming onto the show. And thank you for building PointMe. We have found tons of amazing award redemptions for clients through your tool. So thank you again so much for coming onto the show and dropping so many great gems and building such a fantastic product.
Oh, likewise. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please check out the links in the show notes for more information on any of the cards. Also, if you apply for a card using the links on that page, I may receive a commission too, so please and thank you. P.S. I hear the links work better in Internet Explorer or Safari, and sometimes the credit card applications tend to glitch out in Chrome. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular points program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels! Thank you.